This County 10 podcast bonus conversation is made possible by Elevate Rehab Hand and Orthopedic Physical Therapy at 4th and Main and Lander. They're now seeing patients in Dubois on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Quit living in pain or discomfort and check out Elevate Rehab Hand and Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Rendezvous Dental now open at North 8th West and Sunset in Riverton, and they're accepting new patients. Dr. Crane and Dr. Sackett pride themselves on bringing you the latest state-of-the-art techniques and technology. They really do have a great staff and a great new building. That's Rendezvous Dental. And the show brought to you by YDOT. The Wyoming Department of Transportation reminds you to always wear your seatbelt. Stats are overwhelming. Seatbelts simply save lives. It takes you half a second. Buckle up every single time. Easiest way to prevent the loss of life in the event of a crash. Buckle up every time. Thanks to YDOT. Well, thanks for joining us again here in the Porter's 10Cast studio, made possible by Porter's Supply Company. I'm Jared Anderson. If you have not yet checked out our latest Faring in the Field piece, our County 10 reporter Amanda Faring released a piece earlier this week on the latest project from Eagle Bronze Foundry in Lander, which is a statue that's honoring a professional baseball Hall of Famer and Alabama legend Joe Sewell. It's probably to your benefit to go check out the Faring in the Field piece and get a little more background information first. But we wanted to publish the full conversations that Faring had because they're just too good not to, frankly. So be on the lookout for a full interview over the phone with sculptor Chip Taylor coming soon. But first, here's some of her conversation with the Eagle Bronze Foundry manager, Ed Hooper. Ed begins the conversation by talking about Chip Taylor and a little bit more about his work with Eagle Bronze Foundry.
Yeah, Chip's a real easygoing guy. He's got a farm down there.
He
started in orthodontics, sculpting teeth, went seeing, did, yeah. I can do that. So he started doing little charms and stuff.
Okay.
He can do that. So he did a few things.
Awesome.
It's all in the bio that he gave me. I asked him if he could send me one because he told all this to me the first day I met him.
And you're like,
I can't remember all of it. I didn't want to misquote. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But he says, man, that'd be great. Talk to the president of the university. He said, that'd be fantastic. We'd love to see this get covered. I mean, this is an important guy to us.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so, that's awesome.
So that'll be fine.
That's great.
So, this was originally slated to get installed in February. And then with the COVID stuff, they kind of shut the university down. So it's been sitting here. So now... with everything all set, we've got our trip going. So we'll leave like Wednesday, Thursday next week to deliver it. So
okay, so do you guys deliver and install?
In
or
this
just...
case, we're not going to install it. The university's going to do it. But most of the time, we do all our own installations. We'll deliver and install most things. So this is going to be tagged along with two or three other pieces going to the Carolinas. And so we're going to stop in Tuscaloosa on the way and
drop
this off for the university.
And wow.
And we got a couple other projects that we're going to be doing for the university as well within the next year.
University of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, and he's currently working on another one. It's a bust of his wife's other grandfather, who I think is the one who's like got his name on like one of the halls.
Wow.
And something. I mean, her family's
deeply
tied in.
Rooted down there.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
So for him, he's like, you know, her family's real rich in the University of Alabama. So this is kind of great. And so. This was kind of his first stop, and now that he's got this one, they're happy with it. They got a commission for another one. So I think we're going to see a lot of work from Chip Taylor over the next few years. So.
That's great. How long did this piece take?
We got it in, I'd have to look in the calendar. I want to say we got it back in October, November, somewhere around there. It was right before winter kind of hit in. He made his own molds,
okay.
And so he delivered the molds up here to us. Toured the foundry, kind of showed them what we're doing, and we had usually it's about a 3-month process to turn out a monument, roughly. And so we were due in February, and then when that whole thing came, we've just been finished for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say roughly 12 weeks to,
12 weeks.
To turn something around like this, 12
wow.
to 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed. Sorry, I assumed it would take much longer than that.
Yeah. I mean, the total project, I think it took him a month to do his molds, which is pretty slow, but his molds are for a new artist, his molds are perfect. I mean,
awesome.
He did a great job on it.
That's
his
great.
Orthodontics career really played into help. I mean,
because
you're making molds and all this
all
stuff.
The time.
It's just different subject matter.
all the time.
Yeah, so it worked out real good.
That's awesome. And is this you go all over the country. Is this your first piece for Alabama?
This is our first piece for Chip.
For Chip, okay.
Yeah, we've probably done a few things in Alabama, but one of the biggest things we just recently did, there's a set of Alabama history plates that Caleb O'Connor made. This is the guy that he was kind of schooling under. So Caleb did one for the University of Alabama, and I can't remember where it's at around the university, but there's a bunch of these kind of wedged pillars about 20 feet apart, and each one has a scene from Alabama's history, like the slag furnace. I can't remember what it was called, but you know, and I seen it on an episode of Ride with Norman Reedus where they actually had it on there.
Oh, really?
This place, it's a historical landmark. It's why it's only still standing. They don't do the work there anymore, but it was a sloss furnace, and then there was a you know, it's a riverboat landing from the slave trade. I mean, it was all different scenes throughout when the Rural Electric Company first got in, the first lines that got run through Alabama.
Oh, wow.
So he did, I think it was 16 different plaques. And these were 2-foot by 3-foot plaques that were in 3D relief.
Okay.
That had to do with the different aspects of Alabama history. Mm-hmm. And then had them all placed around this drive in the, you got the university.
Okay.
So first project we've done for Caleb. Big one for the University of Alabama that we did. And then this came in close second. And then we've got the other one we're going to be doing for Caleb. It's a large, like a splash in stainless steel that's looking like a, if you pictured like a drop of mercury splashing.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. It's a big water droplet cast. It's going to be done in cast and stainless steel. Now that one he's still sculpting on. I don't think that has been totally released yet. And then, of course, he's got this Boxer of Dante. And he's got a couple other things he's doing. So
oh, wow. Okay, really jumping in full force.
Yeah. Caleb, yeah,
for sure. That's super exciting. And so kind of circling back here to your last, I shared it, I didn't have too much information about it at that point, but I shared it on County 10. It was the horses from Arturo. And so that was your biggest and longest piece.
Longest for sure.
Okay.
Probably would say second biggest piece.
Really?
We've done as far as scale goes. In 2006, this is just predates by a year of Arturo's piece coming in, we finished the Conquistador. It was Don Juan Anante. He's famous for introducing the horse to the Americas. So he was a conquistador, came over from Spain. This is sitting in El Paso, Texas, at the airport of El Paso, Texas.
Really? Okay.
He stood on his base installed in Texas. He's 47 feet tall. So
oh, my gosh.
When we did the final fit up for him, we had to hire a crane to stand him up outside our building because we were just too tall.
Yeah.
And so we picked up that project from another foundry that's since now has passed out of history. But it got too large for them to handle. The whole project was going over budget and over time.
Oh, no. Okay.
The artist didn't want to see the project sink. So he called us up and said, you know, hey, can you guys do this? Monty flew down, our president, looked at it and said, I can do it for the remaining cost in your budget and I can finish it on time.
Okay.
And so they salvaged it. They trucked up what was left of it, 5 semi-trucks to get it up here.
Oh, my
gosh. And then we finished it the next handful of months, redesigned the armature and installed it on time and under their budget to finish it out. And
wow.
So for us, it was a big thing for Texas because it helped us get the thing done and shows we can do what people are looking for.
Yeah.
About a year later, Arturo comes in with the two horses.
Okay.
And they started off with about a 4-foot-tall plastiline model that he sculpted in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had that computer scanned, and then he had an enlarger that that worked for us, I think, out of California, that then cut that in the 27-foot-tall versions they were at.
Okay.
All that got shipped up to us, and then we had to build a steel frame and then basically glue each of those foam sections together to recreate in the enlarged version in foam of what he has sculpted in 4-foot. And then we applied the clay to the outside, and then over the next year and a half, him and a few of our artisans worked to get the clay on, smooth it up, and sculpt everything that was to the piece. And then he lost his funding. So the guy that was going to help him fund some of this through lost his money in the housing market in 2008.
Oh, no. Okay.
And so then it was, it's all yours, pal. And he says, well, I've got a guy that's interested in buying, but I have to have it done to sell it. And so then for the last, you know, 10 years, it was scrambling to try to get all the money he needed to keep working. Mine was this guy still interested in buying it. And so it's been traded around between different cities, between Dubai, Abu Dhabi, with different people interested, but everybody wanted to see it done, not put a deposit down. So Arturo has fought through selling other monuments, set some money to the side and say, here, here's a little bit more. Can we take it to the next stage? Can we take it to the next stage? And then finally here about 2 years ago, he got everything he needed to finish the rest of it.
Okay.
So we had molded one horse like 5 years ago, took it down, had just a single horse in here. Finally molded it about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
And then started the casting process to finally get everything in metal. Then it's taken us about a year and a half per horse to get everything assembled, armature inside, then stand them up and finish them.
Wow.
And so they're sitting comfortably in New Jersey right now.
Hanging out in Jersey.
Okay. So they got delivered Tuesday last week.
All right.
And so from there, I don't know where they're going other than he originally was going to bring them back to his hometown of Sicily.
Yep.
And then set them up on some land he's got there. Okay. He was going to have a big function with these people that had been interested in all these years to come here and have a big party here and see who would like to actually buy these things.
Yep.
He's got a limited edition of three. So two bronze castings, one in stainless steel.
Okay.
The stainless steel, I believe he was going to leave that in Sicily. He'll build it, stick it there, and it'll be in his hometown.
Okay.
And then the other two would be open for sale.
Okay.
Then the large one we talked about.
So yes.
The magazine or the article referenced that.
Yeah, it's like Google Translate was not so hot, I guess.
So the story from Arturo is that he's got some land purchased on both sides of the river.
Okay.
The acreage is bought for it.
That makes sense.
And what he wanted to do was to build it at 110 feet tall. So it's four times larger than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that would be fabricated on site like the Statue of Liberty. It's not just big sheet panels that don't really bend much because you got such a huge size.
Right.
And the really detailed things like the heads, those in parts of the tails, those areas would probably be cast. And we would do those large sections. And that one horse would be on one side of the river, one be on the other side of the river. You could actually walk up inside the horses, just like the Statue of Liberty.
Really?
You'd have a small elevator that would take you up the inside there, up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be able to walk across from mouth to mouth and come down the other side. He would have a large restaurant at the base of the one.
Wow.
A museum and gift shop on the base of the other side.
Yeah.
And he says, I've already got 57 tons of steel purchased for this sitting in New Jersey when we get ready to do this.
Okay.
I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll ever happen. But that has been his dream since he started these. This is only intermediary. We get these three sold, then I get the one back home. I want to start working on getting the larger one.
Larger one then.
So.
All right.
We just don't know.
Waiting for that to happen and everything. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. And that really didn't take that amount of time. I mean, in all honesty, aside from funding issues and that kind of stuff,
never had the funding issues, it would have been about a 3-year project.
Okay.
Because you have about a year to do all of the sculpting. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were talking putting clay 1/2 inch thick on the entire size of this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the amazing thing about enlargements is even though we're doing the enlargement, somebody's still got to put clay on it.
Right.
And texture it. You just have all the anatomy and the mechanics is all taken care of. So you don't have to do the calipers and figure out your proportions.
Mm-hmm.
If you did it right small, it's going to look right big.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody's got to put the clay on it still, no matter what.
Yeah.
So we would have had about a year worth of time doing that. We had just finished that up right when everything dumped out. So we started 2006, he sculpted it. I think he threw the image out to get the enlargement done.
Mm-hmm.
That came back. We started building in 2007. And by the first part of 2008, right before everything went down, we got the clay on it. We had just a little bit left to go when everything was like, I can't cast it now. I don't have the money for the molds now.
Okay.
My guy who was going to fund the thing and help me get it to that point so we can, he's going to make an investment on it. He gets the money at the back end, And I got a buyer already set now.
Right.
I just got to get it done. Yeah. And that whole thing dumped. And so...
So
it would have been about a 2.5 to 3 year project if you would have started it all the way through.
Okay.
And so although it's been here, most of the time it sat. We'd work a little bit on it. And we just had to work around this 40-foot by 27-foot monstrosity in the middle
of our
shop.
Huge, but still,
so,
taking up that amount of space, that's giant.
Yeah. And every year it looked like he was almost had it. I got this, and this guy's going. It's been a real battle with a lot of the buyers on the end because they didn't want to put a deposit. Most places you'll have a community or a buyer be interested. They'll put half the money down. The artist can get the carpenter going, finishes it, and then gets the other half. And
lets
the founder get paid, the mold guy gets paid, and if artist's got some starting capital to get all the materials to sculpt it. That just didn't happen for him on this one. It was that close, and then. So.
Have you worked with him before?
We've actually worked for Arturo since 2004.
Oh, okay. So quite some
time. We are probably one of two founders that exclusively cast for him. He's world famous for doing the Wall Street Bull in New York.
Yep.
Donated it in 1987. Dropped it off in the middle of the night, got arrested, thrown in jail because you can't do that.
Yep.
Turned around 2 days later and did it again. Got arrested again. And then ultimately he sold it to a person who donated it with the condition that it never gets resold. And it's the only private piece of artwork permanently on loan to the state of New York.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's the only piece of art like that. And of course, it's got world history now. Everybody travels and comes to see the bull.
Oh,
right
for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So in Bowling Green. So he got all of his notoriety from that.
Mm-hmm.
And to him, he came here, I think he immigrated in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much money he had when he came over. But, as we talked, he said, I had a little studio in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I sculpted stone. I did this. I did that. I kind of wilt my way up. I paid the $250,000 I needed to be able to cast this and give it to New York.
Yeah.
And so that's a real special honor for him.
Yeah, that's
great. So we started doing small versions, 8-foot versions, which is half the size of the New York bull for him. And he's sold those through Canada, the United States. We've probably done seven castings of that bull in a half life size or half size. Mm-hmm. And then in 2009, I think, or 2010, he was commissioned by Shanghai to do a version of the Wall Street Bull for their Hubun Financial District.
Oh, okay.
So he sculpted another bull opposite position, mm-hmm. put a curl in the tail. So it's just enough different from the New York, but it mimicked what kind of
the same
financial
thing, yeah.
strength that the Chinese market had.
Mm-hmm.
And so we completed that for him, I think, in 2009.
Okay.
And shipped that over there to them. So that's installed there in the Hubun District.
Wow, okay.
And then he's done some other pieces. I know he did a set of gates, some real fancy gates for somebody over in China for their entrance. We have these Ford panel
gates. Wow.
And so most of his stuff is international.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Yeah.
And so right now he's got an exclusive contract with a gallery in London to do 6-foot versions of that same.
Oh, okay.
So
6-foot versions.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're the only ones you can get the 6-footers from. So.
Okay.
So yeah, he's an interesting fellow. He's got a lot of great stories. He's a fun guy to be around.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I can just imagine.
Would you be able to let me know when you're done with the forklift?
Take it.
Well, it has that part on there.
I'll put it back on. Go ahead. So yeah, it's we've been casting for our tourists since 2004.
That's quite some time. That's really great. So how exactly, for I guess our listeners who maybe don't know exactly how this works, so artists come to you with this idea of a sculpting, and you just kind of go from there, or
an artist will, when they sculpt something, and mm-hmm. we're a one fish in a big pond.
Mm-hmm.
For in our region, there's probably 5 or 6 foundries similar to us in our Rocky Mountain area. And of course, we compete not just in Lander, but we compete really on a national level.
Sure, yeah.
You know, against foundries in California, mm-hmm. New Mexico, out in the East Coast. And so an artist generally will sculpt something small and Marquette, and mm-hmm. then they'll submit that out to different foundries. And a lot of have foundries that they're used to working with or prefer to work with,
mm-hmm.
and ask for a bid, a quote. So we'll give a rough estimate of what we think that piece is going to cost.
Yeah.
In order for us to produce the piece for them. And if the foundry's reputation and the price both coincide together to make a happy client, then they'll send the clay to us or whatever material they sculpted it out of. For us to make a mold of. And at that point, we will sometimes dissect the piece into smaller sections, and we'll make a silicone or a polyurethane rubber mold of the original piece. Once that's set up, then we'll back it up with a plaster or foam mother mold jacket that helps to hold the shape of the piece. And then we'll cut that mold open, we'll separate that out, and we'll have a left side and a right side of whatever the artist's original work is. They can have their original work back, usually with not too much damage. And then from that foam or mold, we can tie the two pieces together, pour wax down the inside,
mm-hmm.
manipulate it around, slosh it so it builds up a coat, and then you dump the excess wax out. And you do that 2 or 3 times to get 1/8 to 3/16 inches overall thickness. So it's a hollow casting,
yeah.
But it's only about 1/8 to 3/16 thick.
Oh, wow, that's really thin.
When that sets up, then we'll open up the mold, we'll pull that piece out of the mold, and we have a rubber copy of what the artist's original artwork was.
Mm-hmm.
Our wax chasers will then take and remove that little seam line that you'll have with the two pieces of the mold come together. You'll have a little ridge. They'll take and remove that line, retexture the area so it blends and looks like the artist's original texture, so you can't tell there was ever a line there.
Uh-huh.
If we had to take a part off, like an arm off, in order to make the mold easily to open to free up,
uh-huh.
then they can attack and weld that back on in wax and retexture that line.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Then we'll attach a spruing system. So this is a feed system of bars that is going to be the pathways the metal is going to flow to fill the entire cavity of the piece. Also, they're going to cut some patches out in order to let that show our ceramic mold get on the inside.
Because
we have a three-dimensional mold that goes on the inside as well as on the outside of the piece. So it basically encapsulates it. Once they got that wax done, then we'll start dipping in the ceramic slurry,
mm-hmm.
and that'll build that ceramic mold both on the inside and on the outside, basically covering the entire wax on both sides. Well, it takes about a week to build that shell slip thick enough so that mm-hmm. way we can withstand the metal pouring process. Once it's thick, then we cut the bottom of the shell off. The wax is exposed. We melt all the wax out, use it for other projects. We can just catch that again.
Great.
And now we have an empty shell that we can take hot metal, pour it right down the
uh-huh.
inside of. It fills up the empty void the wax used to be. Let it cool, you smack the hammer, knock the shell off, and uh-huh. now you've got a casting in metal of exactly what you had in wax. From there, you cut the bars, remove and chisel out the shell from the inside, the ceramic, and you have just a raw metal. It's hollow.
Mm-hmm.
You sandblast the finish off of it, get it back to just bare metal. And then we start welding and tooling and putting everything back together again. And it'll look like any of the finished pieces that you see downtown or such as Joe here.
Yeah.
No seam lines, everything's been welded together. So in Joe's case, you're looking at a piece that was probably cast in about 25 pieces.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In section by section. And then we've welded everything together, installed a steel armature to be able to support the weight of that bronze so that it's not structurally weak.
Mm-hmm.
And then after all the seams have been chased, we'll sandblast it and then we'll apply the colored patina.
Okay. That's quite the process.
It's a lot to it.
But it seems like it moves so fast, though.
Yeah, and it really does. I mean, it's the longest part of the process really is generating the mold and then dipping through the shell room.
Oh, that, okay.
That takes the most time and out of hands.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So a piece like this, in-hand working time in a shop is a couple weeks usually to be able to finish something like that.
Well, that's amazing. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this almost... right about 20 years.
20 years, okay.
Yeah, almost 20 years.
All right. And that, how long you've been here?
That's how long I've been in this foundry.
In this foundry,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I started in 97 and then came back and worked for a few years and came back in 2002 as a metal finisher. And I've been working that ever since.
Okay. So. And what's your, I guess, just for specification, what's your role here?
So my role now is the foundry manager. So I'm like the third under, at least, I mean, the guy right underneath the vice president and president.
Okay.
I oversee the entire production of the foundry as well as the scheduling of projects and and everything. And so
perfect.
Nothing gets through here that I don't walk through hand by hand to make sure that we get from one stage to the
other. To the next.
To the other.
Okay. Yeah. And how big is the crew that works here?
Right now we have a crew of about 28.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
So there's probably the most amount of people is in our metal finishing shop because it's split up between both a small art department that has about four guys over there that do tabletop, life size, and smaller.
Smaller, okay.
And then I got four or five guys on another side that do tabletop and bigger.
Okay.
So, you know, life size and bigger. And so that's probably the most people in one department. But most departments have 2 to 3 people in them that handle just the manual moving things around.
Just the process. Okay. That's great. And then I guess at any kind of given average time, how many tabletop and smaller do you typically have going on at the same time?
Oh, there's probably, I would say in any given week, there's probably around 20 pieces or so that are
really
moving through.
Okay.
From area to area.
Okay.
And on the finished end of the project, we're probably kicking out 4 or 5 at least a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That are finished, complete, ready to go out the door, somewhere around that.
Okay.
Monument-wise, we probably do 7 to 10 monuments a year.
Oh, okay.
From both either small, you know, life size to twice life size.
Mm-hmm. What consider something a monument? Like, what is it? What's that?
For us, we define it about life size and
bigger. Okay.
That's our definition of a monument.
Okay.
You know, some foundries have a different, you know, based on by cost. But you know, for us, anything life size and bigger, we designate as a monument.
Okay. That makes sense. That's great. Is there anything else you can think of that would be good for the community to know about?
Well, you know, I think
what you're doing
that,
here.
You know, one of the things we do here, we have for years, and I wish Lander could capitalize on this. Of course, with the COVID right now, it's a little harder to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I've always enjoyed is the fact that we do offer tours.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And, you know, most of the people that we come through tours, unfortunately, aren't local. They're people traveling.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up here I was 18 when I started here, and I didn't even know for the first 18 years there even was a foundry here.
Right.
Not until I walked in the door.
Yeah.
And so generally every spring we get tours from Bags, Casper, Rock Springs has been very big about bringing tours, Rock Springs and Green River, mostly because one of the art teachers there at the school was an artist and cast with us.
Oh, okay.
And then he started doing a lot of the bus driving, so he was really instrumental in pushing Rock Springs, Green River to get to come here every year with their 4th and 5th graders.
Oh, that's awesome.
To come and actually see the process.
Yeah.
And it's one of the really cool things that we can do for kids is to have them be able to come here and see something like this.
Yeah.
You don't get to see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we don't get a lot of that from Lander. I wish Lander, the schools, would be able to capitalize on that because I think that it's in your community. It's right here.
Oh, for sure.
It's
yeah.
It's a quick trip. And I think that I would have loved to have seen it when I was a kid.
For sure. Yeah.
Growing up with this stuff here. I mean, this place started when I was in 2nd grade and I didn't know it until after I'm out of high school.
Right. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I was super excited to find out that y'all were here. I'm not from the area. My husband's from here, so I think he was in high school when he got tour or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was telling me all about it, and he was super stoked when I told him I was coming here.
Yeah, and it's
just like, oh, it's so cool.
You know, we do so much projects that we don't, for us, it's just everyday thing, and
yeah,
we don't think much about it. And
right.
So when we did the horses, I said, you know, we got to really start being a little more note writer. We got
projects
we do, like for instance, the Grand Ole Opry Awards. We do those here.
Oh, really?
So the little brown statue that says Opry with the microphone on it.
Those are
done
here?
We've been doing those for 10 years.
Oh,
my
gosh.
We've been doing those for them. So every inductee gets one of our monuments, our little awards.
That's amazing.
We do those.
Yeah.
College football does a Home Depot Coach of the Year every year in December.
Yeah.
We do that one for them. So every Coach of the Year for the last 6 years has gotten an award coming right out of here.
Wow.
Major League Baseball, MVP for the American League, that comes out of here too. We've done that one for 6 years in a row now.
That's amazing.
So these are just things that we see. We on Texas Quarter Horse Association has a large race coming up here next month.
Oh, yeah.
And we're currently running their next trophy. We've been doing those for almost 15 years.
Wow. That's awesome.
So, I mean, it's just, it's a, so we have some repeat pieces that people don't recognize that are there every year. We're part of that.
Right. Or you're like at home watching the, you know, the Grand Ole Opry.
That was like one that was really, really special because
The
artist actually retired. About 5 years ago. And instead of killing the project, he was gracious enough to pass it on to us. And says, I can't do this no more. I'm out of it.
Yeah.
But I'd hate to see this. And he was famous for doing all the country stars there in Nashville.
Yeah.
So he did, you know, Dolly. I think he did Dolly here recently, but he did Johnny Cash.
That's awesome.
And Hank Williams and that. And so when he got the Opry Award, he commissioned it. But he turned the complete rights over to the Opry. And so instead of killing it and making it have to go find something else, we're able to continue that directly with the opera.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, it's a great thing. We all love country music around here.
Yeah.
We're a part of that.
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. So what has been your absolute favorite piece that you've done, if you can pick one?
I have two.
You have two.
I have two.
Perfect.
And it's because I'm a big supporter of veterans.
Okay.
The Chance Phelps Memorial that's sitting down at our local at the courthouse right now. We did that one in 2010.
Okay.
And if people don't know the history behind it, so John Phelps was a Vietnam veteran for the Marine Corps. He got the commission from the Fremont County Veterans Association to do a memorial for a World War II themed memorial for the veterans that we're going to put there in the park. And before he was able to finish that commission, his son Chance had joined the Army or the Marines, and he got killed in Iraq in like 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And we finished the piece in 2006. So John and his ex-wife got together for the final sculpting on it and changed the soldier's original face to be Chance's face to represent Chance forever on that monument.
Oh, wow.
So to me, that's a real special thing because we've got one of our local Wyoming guys who lost his life in service to our country and is memorialized by his mom and dad in our monument here in town.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty special.
That's amazing.
And then John got a second commission a few years ago, and that's probably been actually like 7 years ago, to do a monument for the Marine Corps honoring the Battle of Fallujah.
Oh, wow.
And so Sergeant, I think it was Sergeant Bradley Castle, took some hits, and History Channel featured a great shootout episode story about exactly what happened to Bradley Castle.
Oh, okay.
And so the guys were under attack and under insurgents, and one of the guys came in, and they were shot him, hit him pretty bad, and so Castle came in, and he took a lot of bullets, a bunch of shrapnel from some grenades, saved the Marine that he had, drug him into a bathroom, lost his rifle in the process, and then...
Do you want it back over there?
Just leave it. Lost his rifle in the process, and ended up defending the guy that he was wounded against with just his K-bar knife and his M9 that he had.
Oh, wow.
And so... lost a lot of blood.
Mm-hmm.
So when they ended up finally taking down the insurgents and rescued him out of there, they carried him out. And of course, his leg is all shot up. And
right.
So the two Marines were carrying him out. And the message behind it to the Marine Corps was that this is just a perfect example of a man who doesn't let his comrade go down.
Mm-hmm.
You don't stop fighting until the fighting's done. It doesn't matter how bad you're hit, you stay in it until you can't anymore.
Yeah.
And so they did two castings, the Marine Corps did. One is in Camp Pendleton, and the other one's in Camp Lejeune.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
So those were pretty special to us as well because the Marine Corps got to honor that situation and how much of an exemplary soldier Bradley Castle was to his fellow Marines. And so those were at the two training camps for the Marine Corps on both the East Coast and West Coast.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And John also sculpted that one. So.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So those both those veterans' memorials, I think, are pretty dear to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Oh, that's really great. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I don't want to take up any more.
No problem.
But thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed a little bit of a bonus conversation there. Ed Hooper, the founding manager of Eagle Bronze. You can go to eaglebronze.com to find out a little bit more about their services, see some of their portfolio. They've designed so many cool things, maybe not designed, but have helped facilitate so many cool things that have been placed across the nation, and some very iconic pieces have come out of Lander. Plus, they make those awards, like every baseball Hall of Famer gets a plaque that's a Lander Wyoming product, basically the Grand Ole Opry Award. So a bunch of country musicians have a Lander Wyoming product. It is a pretty cool story to see how many things are coming out of Central Wyoming. And the latest piece, of course, honors that Alabama legend Joe Sewell. You can find the full podcast, if you haven't yet, under the Fairing in the Field series here on the County 10 podcast, and a very exciting conversation with the sculptor of that piece, Joe Sewell, who is also married to the granddaughter of Joe Sewell. His name is Chip Taylor. That's coming very soon to the County 10 podcast. More conversations from Fremont County and across Wyoming coming soon to the County 10 podcast too, as we kind of revamp what we're doing with the 10cast network. You'll find a lot more content. So if you are into these conversations, I'd encourage you to subscribe to the County 10 podcast on your favorite podcast app. And if you don't mind, ratings and reviews are always helpful as well. Thanks again to YDOT Elevate Rehab and Rendezvous Dental for making the show possible. And we'll see you next time real soon for more bonus content here with Chip Taylor on the County 10 podcast.